When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Stressed about your bladder? You're not alone. Millions of women are affected. B-Braun's Divine is the solution. An intravaginal medical product, easy to use like a tampon, completely invisible, with daily continence control, giving you the freedom to laugh, cough, run without leakage. Divine is available online at lloydspharmacy.ie and in stores nationwide. Take control with Divine.
Hello and welcome to Talking Point. And my name is Henry Valentine, and we'll just jump straight into it because Finley Provolda, we have a Spanish Grand Prix that we can actually talk about as being entertaining.
I know, doesn't that feel good to say? It's been, I think it's literally been since last time was 2016 that we had a decent Spanish Grand Prix. But I mean, by that race's standards, that was a, yesterday was a real thriller.
It was Hamilton against Verstappen yet again, but it was something where, you know, strategy really played a part, and it did look like two cars just going toe to toe throughout the whole race.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what made the race interesting, really, was because, you know, it's a track that's so difficult to overtake on. I mean, ridiculously so. But luckily, there was an alternate strategy, which, not just Mercedes, quite a few teams ended up taking. And yeah, it made things a bit mixed up throughout the grid, really. Gave, you know, some cars considerably stronger pace than others. And yeah, you just wish that two stops were kind of the better option at more races after seeing that, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just makes it like much more entertaining for all of us, because if everyone's on a one stop, then, you know, it's kind of predictable. And if and overtakes can really only happen when pit stops sort of go wrong, really, which isn't what anyone wants to see. But we'll start at the beginning. And before we even talk about the race, I think we have to talk about Lewis Hamilton's 100th pole position. I mean, did you or anyone think that would ever be possible in Formula One?
No, it's a huge number, isn't it? I mean, but we get this all the time with Hamilton now, where he just breaks a record that you thought would be impossible to break, and then goes further. You know, I mean, even breaking the record for pole position is one thing, and then hitting 100 is just, it's mind blowing. It's just such a big number.
David Croft on Sky F1, he came up with a brilliant stat. It's 9.6% of every single Formula One Grand Prix that have ever taken place has had Lewis Hamilton on pole position. So almost for every 1 in 10 races in Formula One history, he has started at the front, which in itself is mind-blowing.
Yeah, that is crazy, really. Yeah, it really puts it into perspective just how good he's been. I mean, and I get that he's done a lot at Mercedes where he's had the strongest car, but he's done it wherever he's... He did it in McLaren as well, where he didn't always have the most dominant car. He did it in Mercedes when, you know, I mean, 17, 18, and even 19, Ferrari was still really strong in qualifying with their dodgy engine. You know, I think Hamilton, you know, Leclerc took a lot of pole positions that year. So it's not like Hamilton has always had the best car on a Saturday either.
No, not at all. But there are some laps where you just sort of sit back and think, wow. I mean, like the obvious one, like say Singapore 2018, yeah. Like that was just like just inch perfect throughout the entire lap. And for him to like, to outclass like Sebastian Vettel in the Ferrari that was clearly faster, that's just a sign of how amazing like he is with it, really. And same with Styria last year, like, you know, 1.2 seconds clear of everyone else, which, you know, just beggars belief, really.
Yeah. Singapore's always the lap I come back to when someone says like, oh, it's not Hamilton, it's the car. Just watch that qualifying lap. It's, I mean, any time that we tweet it out on the Planet F1 Twitter account, it does like, you know, good numbers because people just watch it, and you know, I think everybody acknowledges just how good that was. It's probably, I don't think it's an Andretti, it might be right up there with the best ever laps in Formula One.
Yeah, I was just thinking Senna around Monaco, that sort of thing as well. Yeah. And it's probably the most difficult track to drive on the calendar, Singapore, like right up there with Monaco as well. And that lap in particular was just incredible. But yeah, if you wanted a lesson how to drive a Formula One car, just look at that. And probably Hamilton's drive yesterday, actually, because even though he got jumped at the start by Verstappen, you know, he got his elbows out again, so similar to Imola, the way he battled back and came back through the field, well, not back through the field, but with his team strategy, you know, it just shows, you know, how good he still is in that car.
Yeah, I did my driver ratings, gave him 9 out of 10, not a 10, because I don't think it was the perfect drive just for that start. I do wonder if he was a bit slow off the line, but it wasn't an awful getaway by any means. But he was quite kind to Verstappen, I thought, letting him barge through at the start. I mean, it's probably good he was, otherwise they would have taken each other out, because I don't think Verstappen was moving. But yeah, Hamilton did leave him quite a lot of space, I think. But yeah, after that, I mean, there was a point, because it's so difficult to overtake there, you kind of thought it was difficult to see Hamilton winning it. But as soon as Mercedes put him on that two-stop strategy, as soon as he came back out on those fresh mediums, there never really looked like a point where it was like, oh, he's going to struggle to close this gap, actually. He was so consistent every lap, you know, a second on every lap, just catching him.
That's it. He had 24 seconds to make up in 24 laps in that final stint. And I'm pretty sure he did it with about 10 laps to spare. Seven laps to spare, which in itself is just like ridiculous. Like that tire delta, that pace advantage. And for him to carry that through every single lap, you know, it's stuff of champions, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It's, I think it's just the consistency that I think so impressive. You know, I mean, in that car, I'm sure every driver on the grid could probably set 10 fast laps, you know, out of 24. But he didn't really have a bad lap. I mean, even going through traffic, even clearing his teammate, which we'll look at in more depth in a second, I'm sure. But nothing slowed him down, you know, nothing rattled him, which, yeah, I mean, like you said, 24 seconds and 24 laps, he needed to have pretty much every lap to be good, and it was.
Which, yeah, is just absolutely crazy. But going back to the start for a second, Hamilton said after the race that he bailed out effectively just because he knew that him and Verstappen would crash if not. And even though it's only the fourth race, that sounds like experience coming through and thinking that he's playing the championship game already.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's been so impressive about Hamilton in the last, since 2017, really. You know, I think since Rosberg and him took each other out in Spain 2016. I think Hamilton's just been such a clean driver generally. I mean, obviously there's been occasions like, you know, taking out Alex Albon a few times, which wasn't great, but generally he's been such a clean driver and his racing has been so kind of fair and he's always left space for a driver. I mean, yeah, if you imagine at the start that wasn't Lewis Hamilton and that was Michael Schumacher, I'm pretty sure him and Max Verstappen would have taken each other out, you know. There's just some drivers that just don't give an inch. And, you know, you could say that's kind of like maybe a bit of a weakness because Verstappen knew that he'd be able to barge past and Hamilton would leave the room. But at the end of the day, that's a better way of racing, I think. It's a fairer way. And Hamilton can still win doing it. So, you know.
Well, yeah, that's it. He still showed that even though he lost position at the start, that they found a way to get back at him in the end, which if anything is probably more of a show of talent than just ramming him off the road.
Yeah, definitely. I think I do think Mercedes probably deserve most of the credit still. I mean, for the win, as much as, you know, Hamilton's drive was incredible, it was that strategy from Mercedes was genius, really. I mean, I don't think Red Bull even considered it. And it took them by surprise as well, because, I mean, before Hamilton came in, he was already quicker than Verstappen. You know, he was already closing Verstappen down. So it was a massive risk, you know, going from having your car about half a second behind the leader to putting him 24 seconds behind the leader. It's a big call, but yeah, it paid off. And it shows just why that team is, well, the most successful, you know, the most dominant team in F1 history.
And for context as well, Verstappen was brought in first in the first round of stops as well. He came in on lap 25 and Hamilton managed to eke his tyres out until lap 29. So he was already on fresher rubber. And then for Mercedes to take that gamble and pit him again, like, it did raise a few eyebrows. But Max Verstappen's race engineer, Giampiero Lambiassi, was straight on the radio saying it's like Hungary 2019 all over again, which it turned out to be.
Yeah, and it is strange that Red Bull literally told him that and didn't think, maybe we should pit him, actually. They only really had one opportunity, though, didn't they? They had to pit him the lap after Hamilton pitted, so 43. And then he still would have come out ahead at that point with equal/one lap fresher tyres. So I guess they must have just been really confident that Mercedes had a faster car there.
It was kind of a split second decision, though, because if they were going to do it, it had to be the lap after, because otherwise, you know, he'd have been jumped for track position anyway. So they probably just took the approach of just saying, right, track position's key here, so let's just go for it.
I mean, a lot could have still gone wrong. You know, a lot could have still led to Verstappen winning the race. I mean, there could have been a safety car. Hamilton could have had some issues with traffic. Obviously, Mazepin did block him slightly at one point, but Hamilton generally was all right going through traffic, actually, which is kind of surprising at a track like that. But yeah, it all just went right for him and Mercedes.
Well, one car in that sort of line of traffic was his teammate, Valtteri Bottas, who was obviously running a different strategy. You'd be pretty certain that he was asked to get out of the way, but he didn't.
Yeah, that was entertaining to see, I think. A lot of fans have been waiting for that for a long time, just to see Bottas show a bit of, you know, a bit of defiance to the team, I guess. It's interesting, I think, that it's come now after all this. I think, you know, it's finally kind of after, well, five years, he's finally kind of getting a bit tired of this kind of role of playing second fiddle. I don't know, but you look at it, you think, was it really a good decision? I mean, all he did was annoy his team, and he didn't even, Hamilton still breezed past him. I mean, Hamilton probably didn't even realize that Bottas was trying to hold him up. That's how comfortable he made it.
Yeah, he did. And he passed it down at turn 10. Bottas didn't really offer much for defense, but at the same time, he didn't plan on giving that position up, which in itself probably says more than anything else about his position within the team for next year. If he's going against what the team wanted him to do, it does make you wonder if he's already thinking about his contract at the end of the season being not renewed.
Yeah, I mean, that's his biggest appeal, right? Bottas is a good number two. He doesn't cause problems. He lets Hamilton kind of be as good as Hamilton can be by not getting in his way. And if Bottas isn't doing that, then why is he a better option than George Russell? I don't think an outright pace he's better than Russell, is he? And he's older. If Bottas starts doing this, I think it becomes quite a no-brainer for Mercedes, really.
Yeah, well, I think a key stat within that is yesterday was his 50th podium for Mercedes, but only 9 of those podiums have been wins. So he's been on the podium 41 times. He's been picking up Constructors Championship points, but he just hasn't really been bothering Hamilton too much very often.
No, I mean, since he joined Mercedes in 2017, Max Verstappen's won more races than him.
In often worse cars.
Usually worse cars. So yeah, I think that says it all, really. He is a good number two, but he's not. And I think after the whole thing with Hamilton v. Rosberg, that's probably exactly what Mercedes wanted. You know, they didn't want all that drama again. I mean, you know, Hamilton and Bottas have never come together seriously. I'm sure they've clipped a few times here and there, but nothing major. So, yeah, that's, like I said, I think that's the main appeal of him. And it looks like that appeal's going.
Yeah, which doesn't really bode well for him. But on the contract front as well, Lewis Hamilton came out after the race and he said that he wants a contract for 2022 sorted by this summer. Obviously, for the 2021 season, it was sorted over Christmas, and time was running pretty close to pre-season before he was sorted. But for him to state his intentions early that he's going to be staying in the sport, hopefully, and getting something sorted by the summer is probably one of the key points of the so-called silly season out of the way early.
I think that kind of confirms that Bottas is going to go, because in my eyes, I thought that Russell's guaranteed to go to Mercedes, and it's just whether it's going to be for Hamilton or Bottas. You know, if Hamilton goes, retires, then we probably have Russell Bottas next year in the team. But yeah,
looking at the other F1 teams then, behind the Mercedes and Red Bull of Hamilton, Verstappen and Bottas again was Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari. What a weekend for him.
Yeah, I think he was my driver of the day personally. I think he came third in the official poll for driver ratings behind Hamilton and Verstappen, which is kind of fair. I mean, Hamilton and Verstappen did both drive pretty incredible races. But yeah, for me, Leclerc was the standout. I mean, in qualifying, just get used to it now, him doing that, just sticking it second row of the grid, ahead of Perez, ahead of the midfield. In the race, I mean, he was even better. Got ahead of Bottas at the start, obviously, which...
Around the outside of turn three as well. It's bold.
Yeah, it's Fernando Alonso-esque. It was great move. He just had so much more grip, which in turn kind of ruined Bottas's race and getting stuck behind Leclerc for so long. He lost out to Bottas, but he was so far ahead of the rest of the midfield if you look at the machinery, he didn't have a car that was that much better than the McLarens, especially, and his teammate. So, yeah, it's just another really impressive race. And you just look at it and you just wish Leclerc had machinery to fight Hamilton and Verstappen, really.
Yeah, they're not too far off, though, Ferrari. They're looking much more competitive and even more so as the season goes on, really. They're definitely making steps forward overall.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, not only from last year to this year, that's obvious. But like you said, within this season, they are making... I mean, this was the first race weekend, I think, where they comfortably did look faster than McLaren. They've got the third fastest car on the grid again. They're kind of back to where they were 2019, sometimes, depending on how many straight lines there were on a track. it's going pretty well. And you just hope that it continues. But, I mean, they've got the resources, haven't they, to focus on this year and next year simultaneously. So, yeah, hopefully they keep developing it and maybe we'll see them in the mix for some podiums later on this year. That'd be good to see.
It really would. And on the Ferrari front as well, for Carlos Sainz, obviously looking like he had better machinery, he couldn't quite get past Daniel Ricciardo. He had a much better weekend for McLaren.
Yeah. In terms of Sainz, I think it was... like quite a few drivers really in the start just hurt, ruined his race. You know, it happened with Bottas and Perez as well, really. Once you get stuck behind a car, it's just so difficult to get past. And I think Perez was, Sainz rather, was behind Ricciardo. I think he was stuck behind Ocon for a fair while as well, which lost him a lot of time. So yeah, no bad race on his part though, by any means, I don't think. It's just a hard track to overtake. And, you know, the Ferrari isn't massively quicker than the McLaren. So yeah, it's not a bad result, but Ricciardo was just, that was so good to see again. You know, it felt like the Ricciardo that we all know and love was back, really. The first three races, he's kind of feels like it's kind of a diluted version of him on track. He hasn't quite been as good as we're used to seeing, but yeah, I mean, all weekend in Spain, he comfortably better than Lando Norris in qualifying, comfortably better throughout the race. And yeah, it's a relief more than anything, I think, just to see that he's back again and he's still got it, which, I mean, obviously he did. He's not going to lose it over a winter break. But yeah, it's just a relief to see for sure.
Absolutely. And for him to... I mean, obviously, he's 3-1 ahead in the qualifying head-to-head between him and Lando Norris. But at the same time, Norris had completely outpaced him in all the races so far. And where Ricciardo was asked to move over for Norris in Imola, that favour was returned in Spain.
Yeah, the team's working really well. I mean, I think they're still the only team that have scored points with both cars in every race, I believe. Yeah, it's going really well at the moment. I think... there's a part of me that thinks, oh, that's going to be a really interesting inter-team battle between Ricciardo and Norris. But because of the fight with Ferrari, I'm not sure we're ever really going to see them battle it out. I think the team's going to be too focused on fighting Ferrari to actually let them fight amongst themselves. So, yeah, but I don't know. At this point, who do you reckon's ending the season with more points, Norris, Ricciardo?
It's so hard to tell, isn't it? I mean, obviously, Norris has had that brilliant start to the season, but you know, over the course of the season, if Ricciardo can continue at his best, like he showed in Barcelona, then there's no reason why he can't chase it down and overhaul him. But at the same time, for both drivers to be performing, that's really good news for them, the Constructors' Championship, because getting P3 with new regulations coming, it's going to be very important financially for the team.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I said Ricciardo before the season would comfortably get the bike better in Norris, and I don't think that's the case now, obviously, but I'm going to stick by my guns and say that he's still going to beat him. Yeah, P3, I mean, obviously that's what they want. They got it last year. They've got a better engine this year, but I don't think they'll get it. I think Ferrari already slightly quicker, and I think, I don't know, I kind of think McLaren are closer to their full potential than Ferrari are at this point. I could see Ferrari developing more and getting a bit of a gap there, but either way, it's, you know, really good season for both of them at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Both McLaren drivers said after the race that their car still feels a bit tricky to drive. So you do wonder, as you say, it's probably more a case of finding the right setup rather than the car itself being developed throughout the season, because obviously 2022 is going to be so important.
Yeah, it's a weird one. How important is P3 this season compared to having a good car next season? I mean, there's a lot of calculations going on, I imagine, at the moment in every team. And logically, every team is going to lean towards 2022. I mean, even Ferrari have said they're doing that. So,
yeah, still a long season ahead, though. And but looking a little bit further down the standings as well, Sergio Perez came back from P8 on the grid to finish fifth. He was apparently nursing a shoulder issue on Saturday, which affected his qualifying, but again, he just couldn't quite just work his way through the field quickly enough. And he's admitted himself that he's finding that it's taking him too long to get up to speed at Red Bull, and it's just the second seat at Red Bull curse striking again.
Yeah, I think he's definitely been better than Albon was, to be fair.
100%, yeah,
but really his qualifying not only cost him a shot at a good race, but it cost Red Bull the win, you could argue, because not having him near the front gave Hamilton complete freedom in terms of strategy. You know, I think if Hamilton was to fall behind Perez as well as Verstappen, if he pitted for the second time, then it would have become a completely different matter. You've got Hamilton trying to overtake two Red Bulls. Well, one, it would, you know, be more cars on the road for Hamilton to pass. But two, it means Red Bull could split their strategy. You know, they could just do exactly what Hamilton did with one of their cars. And it wouldn't really be a risk because they've got the other one staying out on a one stop. So, yeah, it really showed that they desperately need Perez up there at the front if they're going to fight Mercedes. Because, I mean, say what you will about Bottas, but he's never far off. I mean, he's, what, 10 seconds odd, which is not a massive gap, really. So they had the chance to keep him out and pit Hamilton. Yeah, I think Perez, I mean, it was all qualifying at this track, wasn't it? It cost him. Because, I mean, a track where it's so difficult to overtake, finishing three places up on where you started isn't actually a bad effort. The only issue is just he started so low down, you know, and it was never really going to be. You look at it there, and if he passed Ricciardo at the start, then he'd have been right behind Bottas. So
that's it. Well, it took him until lap 46 to pass Daniel Ricciardo, which I don't know if it was a sign of strength of Ricciardo's race or just how tricky Perez was finding it out there, or just a combination of the two.
Yeah, I think a bit of both. I think Ricciardo defended really well, but it's just so difficult to overtake. I mean, Bottas was stuck behind Leclerc for the entire first stint, and he only got ahead via the pits, you know? So, yeah, this track is frustrating in that regard. You just wish that straight was a bit longer, or they got rid of that windy final sector and made it a bit more like Portugal, where you can pick up a bit more speed going onto the pit straight. But yeah, it's, I mean, Perez can't afford that qualifying again in Monaco, can he?
No, not at all, which, you hope for his sake that he picks it up, because he's such a popular driver as well as being talented. I mean, obviously a race winner now as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't think there's any doubts about his ability now. I think it might just, it's taken a while for him to get to grips with the car settling, but I mean, we know it's a difficult car to drive. And to be fair, we are only four races in, and he's already got three top five finishes from four races. I mean,
yeah,
it's not awful, is it? It's not great, but it's not a bad start by any means, I don't think.
Yeah, that's it. Face value is not too bad at all. I think the main issue has come from just the actual time difference between him and Verstappen, but you would hope that that'll even out in a few races' time. But another team to have a good weekend was Alpine. Esteban Ocon out qualifying Fernando Alonso for a third race in a row, and I don't know how many people saw that coming.
Definitely not me. I mean, he's just making him look average, isn't he? Which is, you never ever thought that would happen with Alonso, especially, I mean, when he left the grid in 2018, I would have backed him against anyone on the grid in the same car. You know, even if he was in the same car as Hamilton and Verstappen, I'd have thought, yeah, Alonso would give him a good go, maybe even beat them. But yeah, it's not happening this year. Again, same with Perez. It's only four races in, so it's too early to say that, oh, Alonso's passed it. He shouldn't have come back. but it's great for Ocon, though. I think we should really focus more on Ocon doing really well rather than Alonso doing not so well. I mean, he's kind of starting to look like the driver that was so highly, highly rated back in 2017 and 2018, which is really good to see. And it looks like him and Alonso might have a car to fight Ferrari and McLaren, maybe. I mean, it was kind of strange in that it looked really strong on Saturday in qualifying. You know, Ocon got P5. But
yeah,
then
fifth, yeah.
On Sunday, it didn't really look that good. The race pace was kind of a different kettle of fish entirely. So I'm not sure if maybe the setup, they prioritized qualifying because it's so difficult to overtake, which would make sense. But maybe they just went a bit too far in that direction because they did both kind of plummet down the order in the end.
They did. And Alonso in particular, he was a bit lighthearted about it after the race, but for him to attempt a one stop after pitting so early, it didn't really pay dividends for him. But to be fair to him, he was still running in the points and defended admirably against a really long train of cars behind him, but he just couldn't quite eat those tyres out to the end, which ultimately cost him.
No, I think he did an admirable job of trying it, though. I mean, he did, you know, Verstappen, his tyres were pretty destroyed. I mean, you know, when Hamilton overtook Verstappen, you got that on board and you saw the rubber flying in Hamilton's face from the rear of the rear tires of Verstappen. So his were pretty much destroyed. And I think Alonso did something like seven more laps than Verstappen on his tires, which says it all, really. And like you said, he was holding on for a long time and holding off five odd cars or something for a good while. So I don't think it was that bad a drive. I think it was just insanity for Alpine to try and put him on that straight. I mean, I get it. If you've got two cars, you may as well mix things up. But yeah, it was never really going to work, I don't think. Everyone was just waiting for his tyres to hit the cliff, and they did. But I mean, he looks as good as ever wheel to wheel. And yeah, that car is looking, I don't know, personally, I didn't expect Alpine to, you know, if you ask me after even the second race, I would have thought Alpine are probably going to be fighting with Aston Martin and like AlphaTauri are going to be way ahead of them. But I mean, yeah, I definitely didn't expect them to be kind of closer to Ferrari and McLaren. I mean, did you?
No, not at all. I think it's a positive sign, though, because Alonso has already, he said before the season started that he's already kind of written off 2021 in his mind as just being a season, A, to get back into it, and B, because he's sort of resigned himself to the fact that the car's not going to be that competitive. But I think, you know, they're looking better than most people thought they would.
And I think they've made more progress in the first four races than any other team, probably. Mm. If you compare their performance at the first race to Spain, I think they're the team that's made the biggest step forward. I mean, Ferrari look a lot better too, but yeah, I'd say Alpine are definitely the ones that made the biggest step forward. And if they keep going on that trajectory, then they'll be right up there with Ferrari and McLaren soon, which that'd be good fun.
It was extremely packed, like all the way through midfield, which was great to see. I mean, about four or five laps from the end, I counted there was six cars in the DRS train just going down the main straight together, just trying to fight for those final points paying positions, which, you know, if that was further up the field, obviously we'd be thrilled with it, but it's just a shame that it's a little bit further down.
God, you imagine if that was the fight for the win, that would be unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, that's what you want to see next year, isn't it?
well, that's the hope. But elsewhere, you know, in the midfield anyway, Yuki Tsunoda was in AlphaTauri's bad books, wasn't he?
Yeah, that was kind of unbelievable, really. It was that interview after qualifying, and he kind of, speaking to the press, he suggested that he didn't have the same car as Gasly. And after his lap in Q1, he was this effing car. He, you know, he can't believe it. He's just really
lots of swear word.
Yes, yeah. I mean, he's giving Gunther Steiner a run for his money with the swear jar tally, I think.
I'll tell you what, Drive to Survive is going to have the sensor on Drive to Survive is going to be having a really big job on his hands this year. But
yeah,
it was, yeah, it's a weird one in your fourth race to come straight out publicly and openly criticize your team. I don't like, no matter how many, no matter how much you apologize, I mean, you know, people aren't going to forget that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's bold. It's bold. It's, it's kind of a breath of fresh air for the spectators, at least. It's don't often see this in F1. I mean, God, the drivers are all so well media trained, especially the young drivers, I think, that
yeah,
never really see it. And Tsunoda is just complete opposite. I mean, he says what he wants. And then, yeah, he's that old expression of he asked for forgiveness, not permission.
Yeah, and, you know, well, the fans like it, but, you know, we'll see how... we'll see how the rest of it pans out for him, but it's a shame that he hasn't really backed up his the promise and talent he showed in his first race in Bahrain, because he looked on the pace straight away, but he just seems to have fallen behind Pierre Gasly in the last few.
Yeah, I think this attitude he's got wouldn't be much of an issue if he was delivering on track, but he's not. So yeah, it's not a good idea when you're not doing too well on track to attack your team off it, I don't think. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. He looked, obviously, he was great in Bahrain. In Imola, he did look really good in the first half. I mean, he fought his way up from the back of the grid to P10, but then he went into the gravel at the safety car restart. So I think we all know he's got the ability. It's just cutting out these mistakes, which are becoming a bit too common now, I think. And it's not just the kind of clear, outright mistakes. It's just the... you know, the little corners that lose him a tenth here and there.
Mm. Well, quite literal rookie errors, really. But you just hope he irons them out sooner rather than later for his sake.
Yeah, again, it's early on. But you look at Mick Schumacher in the Haas and he's not having many issues with making the errors. It's kind of, I think he's probably been more impressive than Tsunoda so far, which a lot of people wouldn't have expected.
No, not at all. I wanted to mention Mick Schumacher anyway, because he, you know, he had a great getaway. He passed George Russell. He had already out-qualified Nicholas Latifi in the Williams as well when the Haas was comfortably the worst car on the grid. Ultimately, he did drop back down again, but he finished 50 whole seconds ahead of Nikita Mazepin, and it's just looking like a gulf between the two of them at the minute.
Oh, I just wish that Schumacher had one of Magnussen or Grosjean to go up against this year so that we can actually kind of judge how good he is.
Yeah, the proper barometer, yeah.
Yeah, because it is really difficult to judge. Is he unbelievable? Is this like kind of Verstappen level of destroying teammates? Or is Mazepin just just completely horrendous? You know, it's hard to tell. It's probably a bit of both. But yeah, I mean, it's been really impressive for him.
Yeah, really good on him as well. I was watching the first round of the Formula 3 Championship as the support race, and I enjoy seeing David Schumacher in there, who's Ralf Schumacher's son. So they could end up having Schumacher cousins on the grid one day, which would be great to see. But one thing like Michael was supposedly so good at was, you know, getting to know every member of the team and making sure that everyone was looked after and everyone was valued, really. And like Mick, he does look like he's sort of building that team around him at Haas at the minute.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Gunther Steiner is not one to mince his words. I don't think he's really going to give massive praise to a driver if he doesn't really think they deserve it. But I mean, the way he speaks about Schumacher, he seems so impressed by him. And he seems really kind of taken in by him already, as the whole team do. I think he is, getting that whole team behind him, which is really important. And I think he's, next year, if they have a decent car, I think it's very obvious who's going to be the lead driver in that pairing.
Absolutely, but like really good on him for the way he started. But to round up the rest of the race, then some very bizarre action in the pit stop, especially for Antonio Giovinazzi, who tried to take advantage of the safety car, but it didn't really go that well for him, did it?
Yeah, that was a weird one. It was I don't think I've ever seen it before. When they were about to fit the tyre, they realized that one of the new tires they had, new quote unquote, was punctured, which I mean, yeah, fair play to the team for figuring it out before they put it on the car, to be fair.
Yeah, great work from that mechanic. You know, you could see him sort of punching the tire. He could feel that it was flat already. And then they had to sprint back into the garage and get an entire new set of tires, because obviously you can't just change one tire. So they had to go get four new tires. And then that ultimately left him with a 35-second pit stop. And when the safety car was in the next lap, so he ended up with like a good like 15, 20 seconds behind the rest of the field, which completely backfired for him.
Yeah, he didn't have any time to make close up that gap before the safety car came back in, which it was rough. But yeah, it wasn't the only pit stop chaos we got. I mean, when Verstappen came in for his pit, at the time we looked at it and we thought, oh, that's a bit slow, but it's not a massive issue. It turns out they didn't even know he was coming in, you know. They just sat there watching the same TV feed as the rest of us, and it's like, oh god, he's coming into the pits. I mean, yeah, that shows just how good Red Bull's pit crew is, isn't it? That even know, and yet they can kind of style it out so well that no one even noticed there was a big issue.
That's it. Well, they are the class of the grid on that front, aren't they? They've gone like sub 2 seconds on two or three pit stops already this season. But for them to be caught completely unawares that Verstappen was coming in was a bit of a strange one on their part. But likewise with Lewis Hamilton for his second stop, like the decision looked like it was coming, but it looks like they made that at the very, very last second.
I say that we just add a rule in where the teams aren't allowed to know when their drivers are coming in. I mean, how much fun would that be? It would mix things up. It'd really test the ability of the pit crews.
They're sort of staggered against the bigger teams as well, because if you win the Constructors' Championship, you get the first the first pit slot in the grid. So, you know, the least time to react. And if you're at Williams, for example, you've got more time to think about it. So, it's a little leveler.
There you go. It makes it. But who needs the 2022 regulations? This will just even things out as it is.
Just listen to us. It'll make
genuinely,
sport better.
I reckon that can be quite entertaining to watch. It could definitely mix things up.
Yeah, they just have the tyres ready on standby so they can know which ones they're going on next. But they just don't know when.
It would be awful for the pit crew. They wouldn't be able to sit down and relax for 1 second of the race.
They'd be terrified, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
It's good that they can try new things like that, but ultimately, like one thing that has been part of the fabric of Formula One for a very long time will be Monaco next time up. And if we get a race like we did in Spain, hopefully that'd be a good one.
Yeah, it's I mean, if you saw the Formula E race in Monaco this weekend, it was unbelievable. I mean, if we get one like that, I'll be very happy indeed. But yeah, I doubt it, to be honest. Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure it's still great. I am so happy to be going back there after a year out. I did really miss it on the calendar. It's just so iconic. And it is such a challenge for the drivers as well. You know, even if it's not the most entertaining race, it is the biggest test of ability and skill that there is on the calendar, I'd say. And I mean, qualifying is one of the best sessions of the year a lot of the time. I mean, it's more important than the race, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, Daniel Ricciardo said after Spain on Sunday that when you retire, you can take a road car to Barcelona and drive around, but you can't do that with Monaco. So that makes it even more special for the drivers to be able to do that.
Yeah, I am really excited for it, actually, which I wouldn't thought, because I never loved it when it was on the calendar, because the race always turns out to be a bit. I mean, if you've got track position, then you're going to be all right, effectively. I never loved it, but after a year out, I am so excited to go back to it, just for the event as a whole.
Yeah, which will be really good to see. I mean, hopefully strategy plays its part again, because it really added to the spectacle in Spain.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's going to have to. If we assume that, which team's going to be faster there? Maybe probably Mercedes. It'll be tight though, I think. But yeah, if we assume that if Mercedes were quicker, for example, then for Red Bull to win, they'd probably have to do it in the pits. I mean, we saw it a few years ago where Verstappen was stuck behind Hamilton for the end, for the final stage of the race, and he just couldn't get past. I remember he tried to move out of the tunnel, which didn't quite work. But I mean, if Max Verstappen can't barge his way past someone, then nobody can. So yeah, strategy is going to be crucial for sure.
Unfortunately, it's not going to be this weekend, but Thursday practice will take place on the 20th of May, and we'll really look forward to that, hopefully. But that's all we've got time for today. Finley, thank you so much for joining me.
No worries. Just happy to have a fair amount to talk about for a Spanish Grand Prix. Long may it continue.
Absolutely. Well, make sure you follow us on social media as well. You can find Planet F1 on Facebook. We are at Planet_F1 on Twitter and PlanetF1.com on Instagram. And as always, you can keep up with all the latest stories on planetf1.com. This has been Talking Point. Thank you so much for listening. We will speak to you next time.
Bye.
At AJ Products, we offer workplace solutions for office, school, warehouse, and environment. But at AJ, we do things differently. Our approach to quality and innovation means we design and make many of our own products, giving a more unique and personal service to our customers. All office furniture made in our factory is supported by AJ Products' sustainably managed 11,000-acre forest. Visit ajproducts.ie or call 01 28 11 700. AJ Products. Surprisingly more. Ask AJ.
Sports Social Podcast Network.